Golf Smarter Premium number 556, published on September 6, 2016, is brought to you by Golf Overnight. If you're about to take a vacation or a golf trip, don't have your clubs slow you down. This trip, have your clubs waiting for you, not the other way around. So did you travel and play golf this past holiday weekend and drag your clubs with you? The operative word being drag? Yeah, it's a huge drag to have to drag your clubs through the airport and then wait anxiously for them to arrive on the luggage carousel. Now, I'm anxious each time I wait because I've got experience in watching everybody leave the airport as I continued to wait for the clubs that never arrived. Yeah, and forget about your travel bag to fit in a rental car that's not an SUV and a minivan. Another drag. It's awful. So next time, make it easy on yourself by using Golf Overnight to safely get your clubs to your destination and back home while you are worry-free. Because they are so interested in getting you to try their first-rate service, Golf Overnight is offering an exclusive promo code for Golf Smarter listeners that's going to save you 20%. Promo code when you're ready to check out is GSMART, and it's spelled out G-S-M-A-R-T, GSMART, to save 20% at golfovernight.com, or just click on their ad on the homepage at golfsmarter.com. Thinking about new clubs? Don't buy anything until you hear about custom club fitting with Jacques Intrier.
This is Golf Smarter Premium. Here's your host, Fred Green.
Welcome to the Golf Smarter Podcast, Jacques.
It's a pleasure to be here, Fred. How are you?
I'm doing well. How are you?
I'm excellent. Thank you.
How's biz?
Very good. Really going into my third record year in a row, and
really?
Thanks to some innovative companies like PXG, and so it's been really good. Thank you.
Well, that is so refreshing to hear because, you know, I'm talking to people in the golf industry and golf instructors every week, and nobody's singing the praises. I mean, it's hard to find people who are very excited about what's going on in their industry. Tell me why yours is doing so well, or why your business is doing so well.
And, you know, I think that there's so many golfers out there that are have poorly fitted equipment, and if they go and see a top club fitter who's fitting and building with top product, they're really going to see significant improvements in their game.
And how much of a sales job is it for you to convince people, to let people know the advantages of going through a custom club fitter?
You know, my job is less sales and more educational. So yeah, it's people do call and say, hey, will I benefit from being custom fitted, or I'm not good enough? That's a common one. And in to many extent, the poorer the equipment is fitted for you and the higher your handicap, the more I can help you. So it's very easy for me to take a guy who's a 28 handicap and pretty quickly get him down to the 21 if he's playing with a poorly fitted equipment in terms of the set makeup and the specifications of the club.
Well, I appreciate that you consider it educational, but dude, you're selling. I mean, if you could convince people that it's going to improve their game and that they have to buy the equipment this way versus going through a big box store, that's sales.
Right. And, you know, 50% of my new business is referral, and 25% they find me online, and 25% I have a storefront here, and hey, I've been driving by your studio for 5-6 years. What do you do? And then, you know, so and many times you have to spend time talking to the client, prospective client, and just let them know what the method is. And, you know, I think what it gets down to is what is a good club fitting. And a good club fitting doesn't have to take hours and hours and hours, but a good club fitter will sit down with his or her client for, you know, 20, 30 minutes, ask them a lot of questions about their game, spec out the current clubs. And that provides clues as to, you want to leverage the playing history of the equipment And that provides clues as to what's good about the players' clubs, what's poor about the players' clubs in relationship to what they want to achieve in terms of, hey, I want to hit the ball higher, I want to hit the ball lower, I want to stop slicing, I want to stop hooking. And so a good club fitter will learn a lot in that first 30 minutes. And then in terms of an iron fitting, a good iron fitting should take an hour and a half. I think a solid wood fitting would take a good hour, and a putter fitting, 30 to 45 minutes. If you're not spending that kind of time, it's probably not going to be a good club fitting, and you don't have to do it all in one session. You can break it up. Questions that, golfers who are interested in being truly custom fitted should be asking is, hey, do you have a launch monitor? Do you have a way to do a putter fitting? Because there are swing analyzers for putters. I mean, you may have heard of Sandput Lab or Xenio. So anyway, and ask the club fitter, hey, how much time am I going to be there? If you go into a big box and you're spending 30 minutes and you're walking out with a set of clubs, and I don't see how that could even be possible.
It happens all the time. And how is it, again, we're back to your sales expertise. I know that you're cringing at me saying that, but not only is there the educational process of the advantage of having custom club fit clubs, but there's also the conversation of, an instructor would really do you well if you're a 28 and you want to get your numbers down, but I can get you down, a half a dozen or more strokes immediately with the right set of clubs without even changing your swing.
Right, right. And, that's one of those philosophical questions that people ask me. It's like, well, what's going to change if I go for instruction afterwards and they keep getting better? And so I think the starting point is once you have the right clubs, you wouldn't train for a marathon with running shoes that didn't fit you well. So once you have sort of the right setup, the thing that's typically going to change is maybe lie angle on irons. Or someone may have so for example, somebody may be swinging a little bit over the top, and so we're a little bit more upright on the lie angle of the irons. And now they go see an instructor, and he's got them swinging more inside out or more squarely. And so now the lie angles are too upright. We can adjust that. In other words, we can tweak those clubs. You don't have to go out and get a whole new set of clubs. I played golf yesterday in an outing with a couple friends and a former a client of mine, and he's lost 60 pounds since I started working with him a year plus ago, and we had very, very long clubs for him because he was rotund like me, more rotund, and he really wasn't able to reach the clubs, so we had to get him pretty long, and he's lost 60 pounds, and I think he's probably just a hair over standard now. So we've tweaked the clubs. He still has the same clubs, they're just shorter, and he's changed the grips a couple times. That's all. So,
wow. That's pretty amazing. I know that in the time that I've been playing golf, especially since I've been doing the podcast, I think that my swing has changed dramatically. I mean, I'm not casting anymore. Mm-hmm. I'm not cocking my wrist on my backswing. I'm slower. I'm getting a draw on the ball, which I never did.
Great.
I mean, I have learned so much from talking to so many people in this podcast that and have had a couple of lessons people who've been generous to give me their time.
Mm-hmm.
So I really think that, I'm hitting the ball differently than I did. But you're saying that my clubs wouldn't really change that much?
Well, they certainly could change. And so, for example, if you were slicing the driver before you went through these lessons, we might have had the face angle a couple degrees closed. And with now the adjustability in drivers, one of the things that you could change would be, hey, get it back to square. And then also, if your swing speed is increased substantially, then, you might need a new shaft for that driver. So there, certainly that's a happy, like if you had been fitted for clubs 2 years ago and you've made all these improvements, this would be a happy dilemma. It all depends. Like, for example, I'll ask guys, hey, do you want to have a little growth in these clubs? Do you think you're going to get better? And if I see that they have a natural athleticism and they've got you know, fairly significant club speed. You know, I'll certainly, and I think they're going to progress. Then, you know, so if you think of, for example, of the Callaway line, so you have this XROS, and then you have Apex CF16, and then you have the Apex Pro. Well, so if the person
excuse me for interrupting, but those are just lines of various clubs.
These are models within the Callaway. Oh, so the XROS would be super ultra game improvement. So, and the Apex would be a game improvement club. And so let's say the golfer is maybe shooting 100 or whatever, but has a lot of athleticism, has already a pretty good swing. And I'll ask him to say, hey, if you think you're going to get better, you know, yeah, your index says, yeah, you should be going into this ultra game improvement club. But, if I'm seeing things in the swing, I may put them in a game improvement club. So therefore, they have a little bit of room for growth. I mean, they're still going to hit it better than anything they have right now, but they have room for growth. And then some guys will say, no, just give me what I need right now. And then if I'm better in 2 years, I'll worry about it then. And then we'll revisit the equation.
Ah, those with the expendable income. Those of the expendable income who play golf. Kind of redundant. So if I was fit 2.5, 3 years ago, no, let's say 5 years ago, all right, I picked up golf in my 40s, and I fell in love with the sport and play a lot. And like mm-hmm. I said, about 5, 6 years ago, I got fitted for clubs.
Mm-hmm.
And it was recommended that by my club fitter, who worked in a big box store, but mm-hmm. he's their club fitter, and I know that he was independent for a while, but he's mm-hmm. he loves a regular income. He recommends that I go to a cavity back iron. At what point would it make sense, or will it ever make sense, for me to go to a blade?
Well, there's degrees of cavity back. So again, you know, you think of ultra game improvement, which is going to be something with a really wide sole and a really deep cavity. Then you have game improvement, where obviously the sole is a little bit more reduced and the cavity is not. And then you have sort of, there are player cavities, and then you go to this true blade. So, and then they have combo sets where you have combination thereof. So, you know, one thing I would say is that my typical golfer, his investment in his irons is probably good for 6 to 8 years. Depends where they are. If they're newer to the game, that might change. But I think you should probably should be looking every 6 years. I mean, the technology has changed also a lot in the last 3-4 years, where they've put flexible faces in fairway metals. So almost think about the technology of the driver, which is, you know, there's something called coefficient time. It's how long the ball is on the face. Mm-hmm. And so when the face gives, the ball stays on the face longer, you get more ball compression at the same loft. So the technology that's in the driver face, which has, you know, higher coefficient times, has now been incorporated into fairway metals and hybrids. And in the last 2 or 3 years, it's really been put into irons. So if you have fairway metals that are older than probably 5 years old, hybrids that are older than 4, 3 years old, irons that are older than 2 or 3 years, you're probably leaving a club and a half in distance. And also these clubs are not only hotter in terms of the ball speeds, but they're also more forgiving. So I would say that anybody that has irons out there that are 4, 5, 6 years old, they would really do themselves a great service by looking into investigating their a new set of irons or a new set of fairway woods or hybrids. And again, a good club fitter, getting back to what a good club fitting is, not only is there an interview, but you also baseline with the current equipment. And so therefore, if I have a baseline on your 6-iron, your hybrid, your fairway metal, your driver, I can quantify the amount of improvement. And it gets back to that sales job, right, where it's really not a sales job, because I'm educating through numbers. And, you know, if you see that you're hitting your 6-iron 20 yards longer, you're probably going to think about, hey, maybe it's time to update my investment in my golf game.
So there are times where it's more than just the club face that you need to upgrade, whether it be you know, the shaft or the lie angle. But there are times where it's just a different club face is going to do you better.
A different club face is going to do. And then, you know, most of my customers are, I want to say a lot of them are between, you know, 45 and 65 years old. And so they're losing club speed. And there are things that you can do to, you know, by going to a lighter shaft that's still stable, you can get a lot of their club speed back. And then obviously the technology of the head. So in many cases, I've had people tell me, wow, you know, you just took 10 years off my golf age. I haven't hit like that since I was 45 years old. That's kind of a nice feeling.
Yeah, I would think so. That would be great. I love that. I'm going to have to pick on you for just a moment, only for clarification, but there's one of the issues that I have. I'm a geek when it comes to recording equipment and phones and cameras. Mm-hmm. I'm not as much of a geek on golf equipment. And when I get around club fitters and start having a conversation, or even salespeople when I'm walking in a store like that, and I get into a conversation with them, they start throwing in some industry speak that I just can nod my head and make it look like I'm cool, but I have no idea what they're talking about. Okay, so I'm going to throw out some terms, and I would really love some clarification on what the hell this means.
Okay, sure.
Can we
do my
that?
Best.
Yes, sure. And some of the things that you've already mentioned, I can already start with those. Let's start with lie angle. Okay? I mean, it seems like it's obvious what it is, but when somebody's a 28 handicap, they're new to the game, and they're not sure why they should come to a club fitter, I think they should know terminology.
Okay, so lie angle is simply the relationship of the angle of the hosel and shaft to the sole of the club.
The hosel being, literally break
you
up.
Oh, okay. Well, just think of the shaft of the club. Everybody knows what the shaft is.
Yes.
So if you think about the angle between the shaft line and then the ground line in terms of where the club is soling. So what will happen is that I'll get a lot of guys that are, you know, somebody gave them a set, right?
Yeah.
And, you know, maybe they're 5'6" or 5'8", and they're playing a brand of clubs be more upright. So what happens is somebody will come in and the toe is way up off the ground. You know, the toe, the end of the club is way up off the ground.
When they're at a dress position?
When they're at a dress position. So let me see if I get it. Can I show you with a club head?
I would love to look at it.
All right,
unfortunately, this is an audio podcast, but I can try to describe. No, but please show it to me, and then I'll try to do my best to describe.
Oh, okay. I'm sorry. I thought this
was a video podcast. Well, it's both. You know, we have both. This on video, but primarily this is audio.
Well, just tell your golfers or
you are.
Your audience should just think of, hey, if you address the ball and the toe of the club is really way up in the air, and if they were to able to make good contact, they would be hitting, that club would be soling on the heel side. It'd be very hard for him. He'd be hitting a lot of thin shots. And then what will happen is that now he's got to adjust to, and the only way that a lot of golfers can get to that upright lie angle is by swinging over the top. And so now you're grooving one of the worst habits in golf, right? Swinging over the top. And because he's got to adjust and somehow get his hands to be very upright so that the club can soul centered at impact. And so, now, why is lie angle important? Well, number one, you want to have good solid contact. Number two, if you could imagine a situation of where you had clubs that were very upright, well, if you think about, if you were to lay down a sand wedge perfectly down on the ground, so you're slowly lowering it, and you have a sand wedge. And now if you can imagine that, where the club face is still pointing towards the target, but now the face angle of it is pointing left by the amount of loft. So if you had a 55 degree club, as you lower and lower and lower that club, so that eventually the shaft and the grip is on the ground, the face of that sand wedge is pointing left. And so what happens is if you could hit a ball in that position, let's say you had it teed up, well, all the backspin would be replaced by side spin, and that club would start 55 degrees left of target. So, and that's why if you're a right-handed golfer and the ball is above your feet on a side hill lie, the ball tends to go left. I mean, golfer can can overcome any situation, but that's the tendency. And conversely, if the ball is below your feet, the tendency is going to be for the ball for a right-handed golfer to go right. So lie angle is most important in the shorter clubs. But in these cases of golfers that have been playing with lie angles that maybe were 4 degrees or 6 degrees too upright for them, it's going to be really hard for them to ever get, you know, realize their potential. Because so they're grooming a bad swing habit. I'm sorry?
No, I apologize for interrupting. So the lie angle and face angle are where are they similar and where do they intersect and where are they different?
Yeah, I mean, I was describing more directional angle. Now the face angle is when you're putting the club down in the playing position. And so, and the face angle of a driver that's hooked face. So a lot of these Cobras, right? Well, now it's changing, but historic, if somebody comes in with a Cobra that's three years old, a lot of them have a really severe, you know, they're 4 degrees closed, because what you're trying to do there is they're trying to help somebody has a slice. So they're closing the face. Really good players want something that's neutral to maybe even a little bit open in the driver. Mm-hmm.
Okay, and now go ahead with, you said upright a number of times. Let's get a definition of upright.
Well, upright would be a reference to the lie angle. So if the toe's way up in the air, then that would be considered upright. And if you're at address, and you can see this with putters sometimes too, if the toe's really on the ground and the heel is up off the ground, that's something that's too flat.
Uh-huh. You mentioned flexible faces.
Right. So that's that gets to the coefficient time. So that's faces that, so the driver faces all have a coefficient time, and it used to refer to as coefficient of restitution was 0.83. Now there's coefficient time. I don't know what there is a USGA and RA RNA limitation. I don't remember what it is, but now they've put that technology into fairway metals, hybrids, and irons.
And is that a good thing?
It's a very good thing for people that want more distance and more forgiveness. At top professionals may not be playing in their irons. Some may, some may not. But, you know, if you get a guy like Rory McIlroy who compresses the ball so much, he really doesn't need any more distance, right? And if you gave him more distance, then he'd be hurt at the short end of the bag. So I think, you know, the top 10% of guys might not be using that technology. But there are a fair amount of golfers that are using that technology in their irons. Certainly, they're all using it in their hybrids and fairway metals.
I mentioned before about going from a cavity back to a blade. Who should be hitting blades? And what's the advantage of hitting a blade over a cavity back?
Well, a blade can certainly be more workable, but on the other hand, we do have player cavity designs, which will give you some kind of forgiveness, maybe a little bit less workable. And then people do combo sets. But I can tell you that the amount of, you know, if I do 400 to 500 fittings a year, I might sell 4 or 5 straight set of blades.
Really?
It's the 99th percentile in terms of, you know, club speed and ball speed.
Yeah, so it's not something you're recommending immediately.
No, certainly not.
These are the guys who've been playing golf since they were 4 or 5 years old, couple times a week their entire life.
Yeah, and they may, at some point they're going to want some help because they're starting to lose some swing speed or ball speed. And don't forget, they're also, you can have very pleasing cavity backs, with a very thin top line, not a big sole, and there's actually some technology built in the face. So you can get something that looks pretty close, very clean to a blade, and it's still very good.
Mm-hmm. You talk about the forgiveness. You talk about, you know, for a guy who can hit a blade, it's workable. Let's break that down a little bit too. And you know, some of these things I do know, but I would love clarification because not everybody does. And some of these things I have no idea what you're talking about.
Sure. Well, so, you know, if you think about what is helpful in a cavity back, it's for an average or even a fairly good golfer, is that if you have a high moment of inertia, which is really the ability to withstand twisting, So if you hit a shot, so for example, you know, let's say you hit a 6-iron 170. Well, with a cavity back, if you hit that shot on the toe, might be 160, and maybe it's 30 feet right of target. Where if you hit that with a blade, it's 150, and it's 45 feet off target. So so that's moment of inertia. That's where you know, forgiveness will help pretty much all golfers. It, you know, it'd be very interesting to see if Tiger Woods ever does come back. You know, I would say to him, hey, you know what? Maybe if you got something that had a little bit more perimeter weighting and a hotter face, you wouldn't have to feel like you got to swing so hard, and that might be something you know, good for you as you now are in your 40s. And he just might look at me and say, hey, man, you don't know what you're talking about.
But yeah, who are you?
Who are you?
Why do you think
how
I need advice? there's so many things. There are so many restrictions and rules that you have to work within to create a club that's legal, right?
Well, we let the manufacturers worry about that. But
really?
Yeah, there are certain restrictions on driver length, and but the manufacturers have to pass the test from the you know, so American manufacturers would have to submit clubs for equipment testing to both the USGA and the Royal and Ancient Society, and that, so usually. Yeah, there are certain equipment, you know, it has to be plain in appearance. You can't have a hole in the middle of the club face. And there are certain restrictions. You know, putter can't be more than, I think it's 78 degrees of lie angle. So you can't, you couldn't make a putter that was, you know, 90 degrees with it basically perpendicular to the ground. You could, that would be non-conforming. And there's restrictions on driver length. I don't know. I think it might be 47 or 48 inches. I don't get anywhere near the parameters of any of those issues.
Because so, you're on the – why is it that you don't push those limits?
Well, I'm not a club head, you know, designer. So, you know, so I'm depending on my vendors to push the limits, you know. And they're doing – you know, Mizuno and Vokey and the Callaway and Cleveland, they're certainly starting to test the limits on the spin issues, you know, spin limits, limitations. And so at the beginning of those new rules, they were pretty, you know, when it went from the U grooves to the V grooves, they were pretty conservative in terms of what designs they were submitting. And I think now that they've, you know, I go to workshops and offsites with these companies and, you know, say, hey, we're doing these innovations and we're kind of getting back to those the good old days of the spin rates. And so I let them worry about it. If it's conforming, I can build with it.
So now I'm curious. So you're a club fitter, not a club maker.
I am a club maker, too.
So yeah, you design club heads?
No.
What is the difference between a club maker and a club fitter?
So a club fitter, so I have the studio here, and you can see some of it behind me. So I'm fitting people for the specifications of the golf clubs, and then I'm also assembling those clubs and building them to those specs. So, for example, I have head accounts with Callaway, TaylorMade, Adams, Mura.
So you're using the major manufacturers' club heads.
Yes, sir.
And you're matching different shafts, different grips, and then
exactly.
Customizing it. Okay,
right.
That's where I was missing the point.
Yep, here. Yep. So I'm customizing the equipment for using, you know, well-known aftermarket shafts and grips, and then, you know, what I consider to be the best heads in the world. Tour Edge Exotics is another one. So I also can order clubs, and then I kind of finish them. You know, a lot has to do with people's budgets. So, but for example, if they order a set of Mizunos and there's a very, and they have a lot of good steel shafts available at no upcharge, and they may end up with something like that. And what I'll do is I'll customize, I'll cut them till I get them grips, shafts uncut, grips in box, and then I make sure the lie angle and the lengths are correct, and I put the grips on myself. You know, that would be sort of a lower level of customization I offer. I also do SST puring, which is shaft alignment. So that person may actually want something that's built by Mizuno to have the shafts aligned in a optimal position.
One time that I went through a club fitting, the club fitter said, you know, the Mizuno MX-25 is a great club for you. And even with their standard shaft, mm-hmm. I'm going to go on eBay. He says this, I'm going to go on eBay and find some used ones for you, and we'll get those in, and then we'll tweak it to be just right for you. Is that... Would you pat him on the back for that or slap him in the wrist for doing something like that?
Great question. Well, first of all, I mean, that was obviously quite a few years ago, right?
Okay, sure. Yeah.
Yeah. So five, six, I don't think I'd buy a golf club off of eBay now just because of all the counterfeit, and knockoffs. So I think I'd probably avoid that route. If you were going to go that route, I would, you know, probably go with like a Callaway pre-owned or a TaylorMade pre-owned, or I don't know if Mizuno has the equivalent. Not sure. So, but you know, I guess it all depends on where you are in your game, right?
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
But
not that something that you would do.
I don't think I would do that. But
okay. All right. Let's not
I mean,
point at him.
That's not my clientele. Like, the people that are coming to me, they're really. I'm fortunate to live in an affluent area, and they're just looking for the best solution for their games, the optimal solution. But on the other hand, if somebody had a great set of perfect set of irons and the shafts were wrong, I could retrofit those clubs, you know, and put better shafts in, and you know, so at the end of the day, that's really what we're trying to figure out is, you know, what's good about your clubs, what's bad about your clubs, and what's the best solution. And at the end, I don't spend other people's money, so I'll give them all those options, not that eBay option, but I would just say, you know, we can do this, we can do that, we can, you know, and then they choose. So.
Awesome. And you know, you're sitting here chomping at the bit going, are you going to talk about our group or not?
No.
Reason we got together is that you are with the International Club Fitters Guild.
Club Makers Guild. Yeah.
Club Makers Guild.
Yep.
And I will correct myself on that.
Yeah, no worries.
Tell me about the organization and your role.
Okay. Well, we're an organization that started in the spring of 2009. We have over 300 members, most of whom are club fitters and club makers. We're a very international organization. We have over 75 members in Europe, and I think we probably have about 35, 40 members in Asia. And we have our reason for being, or our corporate mission is to, you know, raise the level of our profession, help our members get better each day. And then also, and that's why I'm here with you, is to grow awareness of our members and what they can offer to the golfing public.
Well, here we go. where are you? You've mentioned a couple times your shop and your affluent area. Where are you based?
I'm in Greenwich, Connecticut.
Aha.
So, yeah. So okay. I'm kind of like kind of a neighborhood where you're located. You know, it's so we're 25 miles outside of away from Times Square, and a lot of golf courses here, and a lot of golfers that are. Enthusiastic golfers who, you know, are happy to invest in their games and getting better.
But unlike the area where I live, you don't get to play golf 12 months a year there.
No.
So you're quiet. What happens
here
during those quiet areas, those quiet times? Do you get busier? Do people, you know, it's like, okay, this is the off season that I'm going to go ahead and get fit and start getting used to the club before the season starts.
Yeah.
Do you have a lot of traffic at that point of the year?
Well, historically, I've been very busy between February and August, mm-hmm. but now companies, and this is to hit your area and hit, you know, say the Florida market and places that have golf 12 months, is the product cycle has really changed. So what happens now is that it used to be everything was introduced at the PGA show in January, February in Orlando. And now companies are introducing their premium offerings in the fourth quarter. So that means Mizuno's actually always done this. So I have a couple boxes of new heads for Mizuno. Callaway is launching Steelhead I should be getting those pretty soon. So a lot of the premium product, which is now on a 2-year cycle, gets introduced in September, October, November, December. And so that's kind of given me a bounce in the fourth quarter. I'm a little busier there. But typically things get really busy in February because, you know, guys are like, hey, we're going to go down to Florida or going down the Caribbean or Myrtle Beach. I'm going down in March. I want to check out what's new and see if we can, I can get a little bit more out of my equipment.
Sense. All right, let's get back to the Clubmakers Guild.
Yes, sir.
I know that's what you'd like to talk about. and I just want to, from what I read about what you guys are doing, I think that you're just a organization that looks for really cool places to have meetings every year. Tell me about what you did last year and what you've got coming up this year.
Well, okay, so we've had a very strong presence at the PGA show in Orlando, which is the third or fourth week in January,
right.
And we're going to do that for the third year. We're actually out on the demo day with our sponsors, and then we have a meeting room conveniently located off the floor. The Europe chapter started last year, and they had their first meeting in Mallorca,
which
not too bad, right?
Not bad.
And we're having the second annual meeting, which I'm actually going to, as your next guest, Frank Viola, is going to, we're going to have a chapter meeting in St. Andrews in Scotland. And there'll be various workshops and seminars and, a little golf played and a few pints drunk.
That's the reason. That's why we get together.
We also have a Spain chapter, and they just had a meeting in Madrid. And let me just briefly, I know we don't have a lot of time, briefly talk about our certifications. We have a certification in club making, and we have a certification in club fitting. And these are online exams, 4 hours, 8 hours if they're a non-native English speaker. And there are 100 to 125 questions. And when they pass the online part, they have to then send a video and pictures with an essay narrative of, in the case of the club fitting, how they actually did a club fitting for a driver and a set of irons with launch monitor data, why they made the recommendations that they made. And then the club maker, it's assembly of clubs, reshafting, regripping, basic skills. And then the certification panel is comprised of some Hall of Fame members of the ICG and also some Club Maker of the Year. So it's top talent judging what's going on. And so I think right now we probably have about 60, 65 certified members. And that number's growing. We're getting people.
Oh, congratulations.
To do it. Yeah.
How you mentioned Frank Viola, who, I'm going to be he's going to be featured on next episode, so we can really talk a lot about clubs over these 2-week periods.
Frank knows a lot.
awesome. I'll grill him as well. Tell people if they want to get involved in the guild, how they can get in touch with you.
Okay. Well, so this gets to our website is www.clubfittersguild.org.
So that's where I got the club fitters.
That's where you got it. That's
okay,
right.
Okay, no, so I'm not completely hallucinating here. Okay.
Club making is still important. Club fitting is important, but club making is still important because you want the clubs built to the right specs. But
sure.
But we thought Club Fitters Guild as a website.org was probably more in tune with our message. So golfers in your audience can find members. We have a Google Map directory. And then there's more about the guild and ways for other club makers and club fitters. They're very easy links for how they can find out more information or if they'd like to join the organization.
Awesome. Okay, so it's clubfittersguild.org for
yes, sir.
For the International Club Makers Guild.
Yes,
right?
Okay. That's right. Our name is a little bit old fashioned. I was a charter member and I wanted to. Another name, but that's okay.
I
can't win all the battles.
I kind of like the old-fashioned type name. It like gives it a history, whether you have it or not. It makes it sound like you guys have been around for a long time.
A lot of our members have.
Not the organization. Well, Jacques Intrier, thank you so much for the education and for allowing me to grill you on words that some of us know, and we're like, Fred, why are you doing that? And then others are going, Fred, thank you for asking.
You can ask Frank about Smash Factor and, you know, launch angle and all that other stuff. I'm sure he'd love it.
All right, very good. Jock, thanks so much. Best luck. Have a great time at St. Andrews for your next
meeting. Yes, sir. Hey, Fred, it was really a great meeting you and a delight to be here. Thanks for having me.
Now, you know that many of the Golf Smarter podcast conversations are also on video, so please check them out at golfsmarter.com or just subscribe for free to Golf Smarter TV on youtube.com. And you can join our conversation with the Golf Smarter community. I've been saying that for a while. I should be able to say it all the way through. The conversation with the Golf Smarter community at facebook.com/golfsmarter. And when you're on Twitter, we're at Golf Smarter. If you have any questions, comments, or suggestions, I'd love to hear from you. Please click on the Hey Fred button in our free Golf Smarter app or at golfsmarter.com.